Welcome to the Main Street Minute with equestrian marketing expert India Wilkinson. This is the destination for all things equestrian, from horse sales, breeding, horse health, and a look into the intricacies of the horse business world. Join India as she dives in with industry leaders to discuss the challenging and rewarding lifestyle of being in the equestrian world. And get ready for the Main Street Minute.
Hi there, this is India Wilkinson with the Main Street Minute, and I am so excited to have some friends of mine who are going to talk about all things trikainers. So I am really excited to welcome Ashley and Matt Boyd, who are friends of mine, have been friends of mine for a long time from fox hunting, and Ashley and I were in a business together, and I thought they would be the perfect pair to tell us about trikainers. So Ashley and Matt, how did y'all get involved? Like, I know how passionate you are. I see it on social media. It's drawn me in. So how did you get into this, and what makes the trikainer special?
Well, sure. I'm happy to start off. This is Matt, obviously. We kind of fell into it. Ashley and I have been together for a long time now. And when we first met each other, got involved in a relationship, we decided we were going to breed horses together. And we came at it from very different angles. I'll let Ashley describe sort of her perspective on it. But, you know, we were involved in eventing, both of us at the time and still are. And we wanted to start breeding for event horses. And hopefully, you know, cross your fingers, event horses that could go up through the levels and perform at really high levels. And so we focused on a horse named Grafenstolz, who was then much younger than he is today. He had produced a few upper level eventers in Germany at the time, but nothing like he has in the interim period. He's become the top event horse stallion in the world at this point, including being the sire of Lordship's Graffalo, who has won Badminton Burley, would have placed highly at the Olympics, but for a silly run out. But anyway, and so I was looking at it almost from a data perspective, you know, how do we do this? And I'll let Ashley talk about what she was looking at.
So Matt is a research guy, and he went through and he researched the pedigrees of a whole bunch of different stallions and brought them to me and said, you know, I think these would be suitable for us to look at. And so he is very much of an analytic kind of guy, and I'm a kind of like up by the heart or a feeling or a gut feeling sort of person. So I sat down with him and watched videos of the different stallions that we had considered. And I was purely looking for whether or not I'd want to ride them. Specific things, you know, in that riding, like, did they look like they were easy to jump? Did they look like they landed in a good balance? Did they look like to be in the venting, did they look like they could get across the fence quickly? Because there's a lot of really good jumping horses out there, look really spectacular, wasting seconds in the air. And so we bought semen from these, or I guess it was already over here, and we bred him to a thoroughbred mare. And then we ended up with that filly at our very first trikainer meeting. And that was a convention. We were invited by a good friend of ours, Anissa Cottingem, who reached out. We weren't super close with Anissa at the time, but she saw that we had this foal and said, you guys should come. At that point, I'd never ridden a trikainer, so I didn't know the part about them that's my favorite part, which I can touch on later, or if you want me to go ahead now.
Yeah, sure.
So at the time, I didn't realize how amazing they were to ride. I'd watched them go. And over the years, I've sat on a lot of different types of horses. I've sat on thoroughbreds. I've sat on different breeds of warm bloods. I've sat on draft crosses, you know, Arabians, pretty much everything. And when it's still true, there's one that I've sat on that I didn't have this instant feeling of, this is what I love. This is the type of horse I want to ride. They're very naturally balanced. They go in a very uphill, carry themselves in this confident sort of way, which is really spectacular. But for me, it's the fact that they're so smart and they're so trainable. So they do have a bit of a sensitivity to them where, you know, if you put your leg on, they're going to react. And to me, that makes them extraordinarily trainable, because when you put an aid on them, you get a reaction and you get them to do something. But they also, you know, sometimes will react if you don't mean to ask them to do something. But they also, you know, I've been in award ceremonies sitting on a trainer where everything else was losing their mind and the trainer standing there with a loop. It was a mare with a loop in her rein next to a trainer stallion with a loop in his rein. So that's what really loving riding them definitely kept us in them. And then also the people that we met along the way.
I love that. And I think it's important to recognize that Matt is an attorney. So his view of things, like you said, he's very analytical, but that's a great balance to you. I know you really well, and you do, like, your heart is your compass, truly. And that just makes an incredible combination. I'm going to throw this at you, and I hadn't thought about this before, but breeding is not for the faint of heart. And I see posts on Facebook, you know, and the joys are, the highs are really high and the lows are really low. Did you know when you were like, we're going to breed trainers, did you have experience in that at all? Did you know what you were getting into, or was it like, let's just go?
Okay, let me start and then you can talk. So we were both already breeding when we met separately. We were breeding horses, but me personally, I grew up on a farm where they bred probably 6 or 7 foals every year. And I actually started holding stallions while they were doing live cover when I was 14 years old.
Wow.
So I had a good idea of it all, but it's really different when it's your baby and you're not just there taking care of them. And we've definitely, you know, seen our fair share of highs and lows and emotions. And, you know, the good stuff gets posted on social media. The hardships don't, you know, occasionally they do. You know, we had one that we almost lost due to a severe joint infection. She's actually our best brood mare, or one of our very best brood mares. So yeah. And I'll let Matt go from there.
Yeah.
I mean, like Ashley said, we had been doing it before. I had been involved with Swedish warmbloods at the time, sort of crossbreeding them with blood horses. But really what caused it to take off for us is going to that first ATA, American Trainer Association convention in Ohio. And this was, I think, 13, 14 years ago now, and meeting the people. We were not breed affiliated at the time, and actually kind of proudly so, which is really funny, you know, now, but meeting that group of people, and I'm getting a little emotional about this because we met our friend. You may have to cut this part out.
We met our friend, Tim Holcamp. I'll take over for a second. It's making me a little teary eyed too. Go ahead.
Let me jump back in, Ashley. Sorry. We met our friend, Tim Holcamp, there for the first time, who really took us under his wing. We knew who he was. That's a name well known in U.S. eventing. He was the owner of the stallion Windfall, who is still alive today in his 30s. And it was the start of a journey along, you know, sort of understanding what is special about this particular breed. And so the combination between meeting the people and then learning about the history really did something for me, and really for both of us as well. That's how we got involved with trainers in particular.
To piggyback on you asking if we were prepared for the hardships and stuff like that, definitely having the people that we met through the organization, and it was like we kind of got like this family of breeders. So not just Tim, who's recently passed, but Anissa was a major part of, you know, somebody I could reach out to. There's Catherine Creasy, who's our breed director, that, you know, I've called her crying. I've sent her messages saying, oh my gosh, what do I do? You know, sitting in a stall. So having that support system through the organization, you know, to bounce ideas off of, but also when you're at your lowest, say, hey, you're okay, you can keep going, has been awesome.
Well, I think that it's amazing. Like I said, I I can feel your passion even through social media posts. I know how much y'all love this breed and what you're doing, but that emotional connection is really real for y'all. So to talk about the ATA, and because I know that so many people have this kind of question, because I certainly do, and it feels like one of the things that you should know, so you don't want to ask because it seems like we should know these things, but I don't. So tell me about the ATA in particular. Like, what is the purpose? And I'm already gathering, this collective group of people who support each other. But outside of that, what is the purpose of a breed association?
And so I served as the most recent president of the ATA for 4 years. Our current president is Lori Lamfer, who took over in December and is doing a great job. But it kind of starts with the parent organization in Germany. It is the Trichaner organism breed is the oldest warm blood breed in the world. It was formed in 1732 under Frederick William of Prussia. And was bred to be the best cavalry horse in the world. They were war horses. And then, fast forward hundreds of years to World War II. Geographically, East Prussia was of the far east of the German territories. It was closest to Russia. And then when the Germans invaded Russia in World War II, they went through Prussia. They ultimately were stopped by the Russians in the winter and the Battle of Stalingrad, and the Russians started coming back. And East Prussia was the first German territory that the Russians got to in sort of sweeping back the Nazi advance into Russia at the time. And it was horrible, both ways, obviously. It was a terrible war. And the people in East Prussia were trapped between two armies. And there were thousands and thousands of Trichaner horses in East Prussia at the time. Only about 1,500 made it out.
Wow.
The Russians came in and they started slaughtering horses, and the Trichaners had to basically, they took a trek across the ice. It was the middle of winter and they had to get, and so it wasn't just the horses, it was the people as well. And so we've been able to become friends with people whose parents were on the trek with the horses. So for the Germans, the Trichaner breed and the people that are involved with it, there is such a like long-standing, very emotional history for them with the breed organization. As far as what the purpose of it is, the ATA or any breed organization is concerned, it's for registering horses. So it's for making sure that the horses that are being recorded, and that when horses are bred, they are bred in a way that meets a standard. So, with the American Trichaner Association, we are a slightly closed book, meaning that we only take in thoroughbreds, Arabians, and Trichaners, and they all have to be DNA tested in order to prove that they are not only that breed, but also that who their dam and sire are actually those horses. And so that's all we take in. Other organizations, breed organizations, are based on just like the Trichaners that were in the area called that, they're based on where they started. So like Hanoverians were started in Hanover, and Holstein was where Holsteiners were. And they're more of an open book. So they will take in other breeds. So it's really common if you have a Hanoverian or an Oldenburg, not quite as much in the Holsteiners, but in Dutch, that you can look at a pedigree on a horse and it will say that it is a Hanoverian. And you'll look at it and there's one registered Hanoverian in its pedigree. And the rest are different breed registries. So they are looking for a specific type of horse. So they'll allow in different pedigrees as long as the horse is the suitable quality that they want in their book. Most registries will register horses if they carry the lineage. So like with the ATA, Matt can talk and bring in more of this as well. But with the ATA, if you've got 50% ATA, a Turkaner in the pedigree, then you can register your horse, even if it's got stuff that's not Turkaner in there, but it's in a lower book. And so that those horses that are in those lower books aren't going to be eligible to be like a stallion that gets approved. So if you've got a stallion that's going to be breeding Turkaners, it has to have not just the pedigree, but then it also has to go through a very pretty difficult approval process. And in any of the breed registries, the stallions have to go through the approval process. So they bring in expert inspectors that are experts in conformation, experts in biomechanics, experts in free jump. They evaluate their temperament. They evaluate everything on the whole horse and decide, and there's a scoring system for each thing, but they decide whether or not that's something they want to continue to produce. And so it stops people from just breeding, you know, Susie in the backyard to Jethro down the road because they think they're pretty. It kind of creates this, because anybody who has a horse, I mean, as you know, like even when they're not the most perfect horse on the planet, we think they're the most perfect horse on the planet. We're going to love them more than anybody in the world. And so it's great to have somebody that comes in and says, okay, I know that you love your horse. I know that you love Paul and you think he's wonderful, but Paul does not need to be a stallion. This is not what we need to be producing in order to create the best horses available.
Okay, so before you go on, Matt, this brought up something because you just made me realize the inspections, which I also don't understand, the inspections, the breed inspections, is that, do all, if you're trying to just kind of walk me through this, if I want my horse to be a registered Turkaner, my baby, it has to go through that inspection, or is it already, how does that work?
It does not have to go through an inspection to be registered.
Okay.
So to be registered, it needs to be DNA verified. That is the most important thing. So we pull tail hairs and we send them into UC Davis is, I believe, where they go. And then they confirm that. If you have a mare and you want her to be bred and then her foals to be eligible to be in the highest book, then those need to be approved.
Okay.
Yeah,
the inspection.
Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. And just in terms of warm bloods generally, every warm blood organization has their own inspection process. As Ashley mentioned, there is a difference between a closed book, a semi-closed book, and an open book. The only truly closed book in sport horse breeding are the thoroughbreds. You know, to be a jockey club registered thoroughbred, you have to have a thoroughbred stallion on a thoroughbred mare through live cover and registered with the jockey club. That's a truly closed book.
And Arabians. Arabians are closed.
Yeah, Arabians are closed as well. Purebreds, at least. For the Turkaners, it's a semi-closed book. As Ashley mentioned, only Turkaners, thoroughbreds, and Arabians, including Shaggy Arabians, are eligible to contribute to the genetic makeup of the breed. There are advantages and disadvantages to that. It does create a very particular type of horse, and you have to love that particular type of horse to be involved with the Turkaners because they do tend to be rather similar. The other warm blood registries like the Hanoverians, Oldenburgs, Westphalians, which take in all different, you know, bloodlines into their books, are more of an amalgamation of those. And they're looking for a particular type as well, but they may be looking for one type as a dressage type, one type as a jumper type. The Holsteiners in particular brought in a lot of Selle-Français blood into their book years and years ago. And the Dutch have brought in lots of Turkaner blood over the years. The Turkaners are viewed as improving bloodlines because they are more narrow in their genetic focus, you know, being a semi-closed book. So they're often brought in to fix other breeds who have sort of, you know, sort of gone too far in terms of the mix of bloodlines that they have. So every inspection, every breed registry has their own inspection process. For us, we are looking at quality. That's part of the educational process that a breed registry brings, because through the inspection process, you get to see what the experts say are the best horses and why they're the best horses, why biomechanically they're best, why conformationally they're best, as Ashley was mentioning. So there's an education aspect to the inspection process. There's a quality control aspect to it as well. As Ashley mentioned, the stallion inspections in particular are particularly rigorous because, unlike a mare, a stallion can produce, you know, 50 offspring in 1 year. And so the potential impact of a very popular stallion is sort of beyond just himself. You know, a mare can only have one foal a year. So their impact is just from a numbers perspective less. So both are evaluated rigorously, but the stallions particularly so, because of the potential impact they can have. You know, the other piece is that maintaining type, you know, particularly for trainers, that's a big part of it. That because of the background, because of the Cindy Close book, we're looking for a particular type of horse. And so there's controls over that that the inspection process preserves as well. And it's an integrity issue. We want to make sure, you know, that the bloodlines are what they say they are. The horses stay sound, because we're looking at that. We're looking at conformation and soundness that they can perform. You know, in the modern era, they're not pulling plows anymore. And so they have to be able to do sport. And that they have the mental makeup to be able to do it as well. We're not looking for the wild animals, the skittish horses. We want something that can perform for your 8-year-old kid, in addition to going to the Olympics. So, you know, that's what we're looking for through the inspection process and what it provides to the members of the registry.
Real quickly, just about the foal. So you did ask if a foal needed to be inspected, and they don't have to be inspected. However, I recommend that anybody who is inbreeding gets their foals inspected for multiple reasons. So it's going to give you an idea of the direction that your breeding program is going. If you've got a mare and you take your foal and it gets inspected by somebody who is not so in love with it as you are, then it's going to help you identify, you know, for breeding the following year, what you might want to look for in a stallion. It also can help you just identify things in your foal that you might not see yourself that can be improved via management. So a lot of the times, you know, if there's some deviations in the horse's legs or in their hoofs or stuff like that, that you may not have identified, the inspection board, whoever's doing it, can identify those weaknesses, and then you can discuss with your vet as well as your farrier how you can improve that. Because a lot of the times you can take something that, if it's just left alone, for instance, like if they toe out a little bit or toe in a little bit, you can work with a farrier to improve that situation. So having somebody look at them at that stage, I think, is very helpful. But it's also, you know, I also tell people, if you take your foal and you get it inspected and it doesn't get the best scores because it's at an awkward stage in its life, because that happens. Foals change so much during that first year and of life. And so if you happen to hit an inspection when they look like a downhill plow horse, then that happens. And so, you know, it doesn't mean that your horse isn't worth something. And that's where it's great to bring it back to have it looked at when it's older, when it's 3 years old, and have the inspector evaluate it at that point as well.
So if I see a horse with the Trakaner brand, it's been branded, what does that mean to me?
So it depends on the brand. So the German Trakaner Verband brand, tongue twister there, is the original one, and it looks like moose antlers.
Okay.
The ATA's brand is very, very similar to the German Trakaner Brevan. We are a approved affiliate association of the Trakaner Brevan. And we're the only one in North America that is approved. And that covers Mexico, the United States, and Canada. Our brand is similar to the German brand, but it has a little underline underneath the moose antlers. And each country that has its own approved Dracaner organization has a slightly different variation on the German Dracaner Verband. So if you see a mare, for example, who's been imported into the U.S., she may have the original German Dracaner marking on her. That means she was born in Germany, that she is of approved Dracaner blood, which means Dracaner Thoroughbred Arabian. And she, she has been inspected and approved in Germany. For ours, we do brand foals as well. And so if you have a foal who is inspected or meets the pedigree requirements, it can be branded with the American Dracaner Association brand. That's what you see there. It means that that horse meets the pedigree requirements of the organization. We also have half Dracaners. And so we have a half Dracaner brand, which is half of the moose antler. So If you see the half moose antler, that means that horse is half Dracaner and approved half Dracaner. And then we have for the other books that has something other than, the approved blood, we have another brand that is like an AT brand that has a different signification. You don't see it that much these days. So that's what it means. The branding is important for a variety of reasons. One, if the horse gets sold down the road and all of a sudden show up in, a slaughterhouse or something like that, and it's got the brand on it, we know it's a Dracaner. And in our view, that's a horse worth saving for the bloodlines alone. So it does help in that situation. If the horse is lost, it helps identify it. It also is a marker that this horse is special in some way, at least from our perspective.
I love that. So I've heard this before, so I'm sure there's a governing body over all of the breed associations, correct? So that's can correct. You tell us about that and how that works?
Yeah. So it's
Matt, let me just make it in a real simple way, and then I'll let you go into the more complicated part of it. But basically, it's the World Breeding World Breeding Federation of Sport Horses. So the way that I look at it is it's like the USEA. It is going to make sure that if you are an organization with underneath their umbrella, that you are functioning under a certain set of rules, that you're not just somebody who's all of a sudden decided, I'm going to put on a horse trial and I'm going to do it any way that I want to because I've decided I'm going to do a horse trial. So that's the simplest way to describe it. And then I'll let Matt go into a more in-depth.
Yeah, it's been around for decades, but the WBFSH is operated in conjunction with the FEI. It is comprised of, I don't know the exact number, but dozens of breed organizations across the world, headquartered in Europe. And as Ashley said, its members are held to certain standards in terms of both organization and horse programs. Generally speaking, you have to have been around for a while to be invited to participate in the World Breeding Federation of Sport Horses. I'm proud to say that the American Dracaner Association is the only Dracaner Association in North America who's been so invited. A lot of what is talked about by the World Breeding Federation is the social license to operate. As we, as we progress away from our agricultural roots, horses are now, sport and hobby animals, and they have to be treated in certain ways to ensure that we are allowed to continue in horse sports. And that, so the World Breeding Federation requires a high level of quality of horse care and horse treatment. And so it's, both an organization to promote horses in the modern sense of the word, and also to ensure that horses are being treated appropriately. It's a key organization to ensure we can enjoy our horses going forward in sport and as personal animals and hobby animals as well. I would say that it's really to ensure this level of standard is being met, it's really, really important to ensure you affiliate with a registry that's recognized by the World Breeding Federation for Sport Horses. That is a sort of a gold standard organization if they're participating in that group.
There's also specific competitions. There's not a whole lot of them, but there are some out there. One example would be Le Lion. So you cannot compete with a horse at Le Lion unless you have a horse from one of those registries. So it's just good to start in that realm, so that when you get down the road and you're ready to go to the Young Horse World Eventing Championships,
yes,
you have a horse that's eligible.
Yes. So just to kind of wrap this part up just briefly, the benefits of being a part of the ATA, and how does someone get involved? How does someone become a member? If you could just go over that real quick.
Yeah, it's real simple. All you got to do is sign up.
There you is don't have a container to be a member. You can just become a member.
Yeah, and it's I think a really sort of nominal membership fee. It's like $9,500 a year, something like that. In the grand scheme of what you're paying for your horse and upkeep and that sort of thing, it's really a drop in the bucket. But what it gets you is hooked into the community, and community is really important as far as this goes. It's the lifeblood of how a breed organization works. You have to like each other. You have to present a united front to the rest of the horse community, and you have to promote, you know, your breed and your registry. So you get to be part of that. We have annual meetings and semi-annual meetings every year. They are, you know, horse oriented, but they're also a lot of fun.
Dance parties.
Yeah.
We have dance parties.
That's all we need.
And we, you know, members from the ATA in particular put a ton of effort into organizing a really, really top tier event that is both educational, fun, informative for everybody. So you get to be a part of that community. You get all of the education associated with it. Our breed director, Dr. Christian Schacht, is an internationally recognized expert in breed evaluation, confirmation, and sport. He's an FEI registered judge. And so you get the benefit of hearing from people like that, you know, in terms of the evaluation of your own horse and the evaluation of other horses. You get validation of bloodlines and DNA accuracy. I mean, we can't register a horse unless we know who its parents are and to ensure we know where it's coming from. So if you're going to breed that horse in the future or you're going to sell that horse in the future, you know the history, you know the parents, you know what the parents have done. And there's credibility that gets built into having that record. You know, and for us, given what I explained about sort of where the trainers came from, it's about preserving the bloodlines. And if you have a historical bent like I do, that becomes really important. The trainers are one of the handful, I think it's one of two or three breeds that have been recognized by UNESCO, which is the international organization that recognizes important monuments, for example, like Notre Dame in Paris. So the Dracainers have been recognized as an intangible cultural heritage by UNESCO because of the uniqueness of their history and the need to preserve it. So you get to be involved in that too by association. You know, when you own a Dracainer, you own a piece of that history as well.
Wow. I think the perception, or at least mine, has been with breed associations that it was more exclusive. And my takeaway from this is actually it's very welcoming and inclusive, which is, it really, like I've always said, like your passion is so obvious, but it feels like family. It feels like you have this just incredible family. So to wrap it up, and Ashley, I'm going to ask you, what is your just favorite thing about the Tricaner breed?
Let me think for a second. I think if you'd asked me a few years ago, it would have been riding them. But I just rode one this morning, which was really, she's a fabulous horse. She's not ours, but super fun. But I think my favorite thing now is obviously breeding them. And my favorite part by far is when the foal comes out and the mom turns around and nickers at it and the foal nickers back. It's just, it's kind of magical. And to be there during that process. And then I know you asked for one favorite thing, but I'm not good at following directions. So, as far as like the actual breed, I think it's their hardiness. Boyd Martin described it once when he was talking about Thomas Testerleg. And he said, that horse feels like he's going into battle. Like he hits this different level that not all other warm blood breeds have. They've just got, because of their background and the fact that they have so much Arab and thoroughbred bred into them as well, they just have this endurance and this hardiness to them that I really love and think is special.
Well, I love that. And I will say after this, I know that the Trakehner breed is just so lucky to have both of you as their advocates
Yeah.
and that passion to keep that going. And it takes special people to step up for that. And they're really lucky to have you. So thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time. And, if anybody wanted to get in touch with the American Trakehner Association or you, is there a website? Is there a way to do that?
There is.
Yes.
It's
Yeah. Go ahead.
American Trakehner. Yeah, americantrakehner.com is the website. And the email to the office is ata@americantrakehner.com. Our executive director, Catherine Jordan, mans that phone all the time. She is a wealth of information. She's delightful, and she will do everything she possibly can to help out Trakehner enthusiasts and those who want to get involved. So we encourage
Also,
you.
follow us on social media.
Yeah.
We've got a social media page and we keep that thing jam-packed. We've got an amazing person who does the social on it. And so it's always got results. If you've got a Trakehner that you're competing, send your results to us because we'll shout out and celebrate you and all of that stuff.
I love it. Well, thank you again for being with us today.
We're happy to
Thank
be there.
you.
So thank you so much again for being with us, Matt and Ashley, and we will see you all next week on the Main Street Minute.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please let us know. Email support@mainstreetmarket.com and join us again next time for another episode of the Main Street Minute with India Wilkinson right here on the Equus Radio Network.